Hello, and welcome to Values, Virtues, Ethics and Morality. My name is Nagla Pillay, and I come from South Africa. And today I have in the studio with me Sister Denise, who has been practicing Raja Yoga meditation with the Brahma Kumaris for over 40 years. The topic that we've chosen for discussion today is the structure and resonance of virtues. The structure and resonance of virtues. This particular topic was chosen in context of this show because Sister Denise has a particular interest in what she calls conventional morality. We ask you to look at the things that you've done in the past, and not just your actions and your words, but why you have done what you have done, and is the way you are currently working for you. We ask you to look at your own conscience, to look at your own sense of ethics, values, morals, etc., and see whether it has relevance in the year 2014, 15, etc. We also find that most people would like to do the right thing in any given situation, perform the right action, or say the right thing, but they find themselves acting against their conscience. Sister Denise will also look at why this is the case. So, Sister Denise, a very, very warm welcome to you, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
So, structure and resonance of virtue, that is an exceptionally unusual topic. Would you tell us why is it of interest to you?
Virtue comes from God. Mm-hmm. And God is pure spirit. The nature of God is absolute purity, the ocean of love, the ocean of peace, complete wisdom, the knower of all things, and who is completely outside the machinery of the human world and the human drama that's going on here. And contained within the being of God is all of the virtues that humanity likes to cultivate. That means that a virtue is something like God. It contains characteristics of God. So, for example, it would be beautiful, it would be stable, it would not degenerate over time, it would remain timeless, it would be cross-cultural, it would be not limited to one religion as opposed to another religion. It's very different from the things that we're used to dealing with, and oddly enough, people hardly talk about virtues anymore. So what is a virtue? It is something that is absolutely harmonious. So the resonance of a virtue would be like a very pure musical note which makes the human spirit feel pleasure, feel beauty, feel goodness, and want to operate in that way. The virtues correspond with the original nature of the human spirit.
So, from where we are at the moment, how do you get to the place that you just described? How does one get to know God and absorb all of that beauty that you speaking about? I must say, as you speak, I can feel the energy of what you're saying. It feels as if God is with us at this moment, which I'm really enjoying. So could you take us through how one develops that sense of being?
Well, in meditation, in Raja Yoga, there are some steps that we follow which lead to that. So the first thing is to disconnect the self from the world of matter.
And why is that necessary?
Because matter, you know, in India, they say that the same word for matter is the same word for an evil spirit. which is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the word bhut. So materialism, which is the foundation of our present society and culture, makes anything material, or it considers anything material to be sacred. Now, matter, of course, the base of matter, air, earth, fire, water, ether, is what the human body is made of, is what everything material is made of. Now, when the soul identifies with matter, then the spiritual qualities of the soul become dormant and their opposite becomes activated. So the opposite of the spiritual qualities of the soul are the negative or demonic emotions, traits, and so on. So that actually the fact that a person identifies with matter means a person comes under the sway or enthralled to greed, lust, anger, attachment, jealousy, and all of these negative characteristics. So then the virtues of the soul are completely overshadowed by those. So by separating yourself from matter, which you do in your mind, and by identifying yourself with the soul, you come onto the same resonance level, and you come into the same dimension as God, which means that you then start to feel the qualities of God, and you also start to absorb them, because where God is full and the soul is empty, or where the virtues are eroded, so then that imbalance causes the soul to absorb from God, and then it changes the resonance of the soul itself. So the effort is to keep oneself independent of this attraction. It's like a gravitational pull of matter, which means we have to be really light.
Okay, so this sounds also beautiful. However, when you actually get around to doing that, all your negative traits will say, hold on, where are you going? We want to come with you. What do you do in that situation, and how? Okay, answer that one and then I'll ask you my next one.
Of course, there's a very, very strong pull. If you think of a rocket, when they send rockets into outer space, they have to use a huge amount of fuel to generate enough speed in that rocket. And the rockets are always made in stages, so that the first stage totally destroys itself, getting enough thrust to counteract the gravitational pull of the Earth, you know. And we're in a way very much in the same situation. So the person who's just starting to meditate will have a great deal of difficulty. But if you persist and you continue to work with it, then you start to get more power. It starts to have less hold over you, and it becomes easier and easier for you to be stable in your stage of spiritual awareness, and you spend more and more time in that same dimension mentally as God, and then the force of negative emotion has less power over you, and eventually it falls away.
Okay, why is it that although we see in the world many examples of kindness and love, and generosity and compassion, etc., why are these not virtues? I think, in my mind, every act of kindness that one human being shows to another is a gift from God. And I've seen numerous examples of it in my own life. But what you were saying is that God offers something more What is the difference between human kindness and God's kindness?
Put it in a different way. The human kindness, which you rightly said is a gift from God, so that soul is endowed with that quality. But what very often happens is the person says, it's mine. And when you claim it as your own, you're denying the origin of it. And then that gift starts to erode, starts to become less powerful. So it becomes a very important, this is a karmic thing between a person and God, to always recognize that whatever are the qualities, talents, and pure attributes of myself, these all originate in God. I cannot have ego of my talents. You see, as soon as I have ego of my talent, my specialities, my qualities, then I'm contaminating it.
Okay. If I want to become the stunning scenario that you just described of God and his virtues, how do I, as an ordinary person, include God in my day-to-day life whilst doing the mundane? I'm driving to work, I'm sitting at my desk, I'm interacting with my colleagues, I'm fetching my children from school. How do I bring God's virtues into that? Because it's not a one day thing or a one year thing, it's a lifetime thing, isn't it? How do I invite God?
I think you just really said it. You invite God. You take moments in your day to just turn your mind to God and invoke the presence of God, come into conversation with God, just move on to that level. It's only a thought away.
Mm. I'm going to stop you there, Sister Denise. What is God's vocation? Is he so available that I say, hey, right here in South Africa, this area, need you now for some burst of power? Now, how is it that he's unemployed, that he could drop everything and come running to me and give me something? How is that possible? What does God exist, and what is his vocation?
Well, God is not human. Human beings can be in one place one time.
Mm-hmm.
God is so capable and so fast that you need God right here, right now, and you remember God with real sincerity. God will be right there with you for as long as you need, while busy being with somebody else.
Say that
at the same time is possible.
Say that again. Say that again. About sincerity.
You know, your thought to God has to be real and sincere.
That's the only two criteria that's needed for him to...
And he'll come immediately, you see.
Okay, so you have to be real and sincere and call him and he'll come.
Yes, you know, but not fool around, you know, because if you just say, okay, well, oops, you know, I think I need God right now, but it has to be built up over time, because it can't be just, you know, well, I'll do anything I want, and then when I'm in trouble, I'll call God and God will come. It's not quite that simple. You really have to say, okay, I choose to consider myself a child of God, and I will live my life according to the ways that God suggests. That means I get credit with God, and so then God and I come into a karmic relationship. And it is this that means that when I really need God, God will be right there. But if I go against the ways of God and then all of a sudden need God, God will say, well, you know, you're on your own here, because, you know, you have been violating my suggestions for such a long time that, you know, it's just you need to really think about what you're doing the rest of the time. You see what I'm saying?
Mm. So what you just described, the internal conversation one has with God, is a mental thing.
Yes.
How should one be in terms of your words and in terms of your behavior that you're not violating that contract with God? Because what you just described sounds and is very sacred.
Yes.
Okay. So how do you make the contractual relationship between yourself and God inviolable?
Well, every word and every action is initiated with a thought. So when you're very attentive on the thoughts, and God is not physical, eh? God is a being of light with a mind and an understanding and wisdom and so on, but discarnate, you see.
What does that word mean?
Discarnate means not having any flesh and bones.
Okay.
You see. So God is pure consciousness, pure spirit, and non-terrestrial. And non-human. And it's very difficult for a human being to think of a being who is higher than they are, a non-human being who is totally benevolent. Difficult. You know, people don't have much information. And so, I mean, people have beliefs about God, usually involving a lot of fear and expecting all kinds of punishment to come, because most of the religions have presented God in that light. So when you want to come close to God, well, you have to listen. You have to say to God, okay, I really, really want to know exactly who you are and what you're like, and would you please come in contact with me, because I'm ready for you now, and I will follow what you say, you know.
Oh, so does that mean one has to initiate that? He won't just drop by.
You have to initiate it.
Okay, so you have to
put forth the thought that God can respond to. So you have to get it right.
Okay, and that conversation you just described is the way it
Well, it's
happens.
One way.
It's as simple as that.
Can be.
I see. Okay. And so once the invitation is extended, you wait.
Well, I think that you probably do a lot of inviting.
Do a lot of inviting.
And
how does he communicate with you? Because I'm sitting here with you right now, and we are engaged in conversation. It's words, because we both have one of these. Now, you're saying that he does not have one of those. So how does he talk?
He can send a thought to you, which you can capture in your mind.
And how do you know the thought comes from God and it's not your imagination?
Exactly. And I think this is why it is necessary for God to have a medium of expression. And then you have to really see that if what is being said, can that which is being said come from that source? So that you have to evaluate.
Mm. Okay, so what you just said begs the question, why is God doing this for me, for you, for everyone? What is his reason?
I think if he
is as perfect as you say he is, he doesn't need anything, anyone. Why is he doing this? There must be a reason. He won't do something that important. Everyone does something for a reason. What is his reason?
God has treasures, and those treasures have to be communicated, conveyed, and given to his children. So the father is concerned to give the inheritance to the children. This is why.
Is that the primary relationship? Father and child
in terms of the inheritance. Another aspect of God which is very fascinating is God knows all the laws of spirituality. God knows what a human soul is. God knows himself. And so there is also the gift of knowledge. And so the knower of all things wishes to convey that gift to those who are willing to be the student. So in that sense, God is the teacher, you know, the guide, the one who is called the remover of sorrow, because a lot of people are in sorrow and they don't know how to get out of it, and a lot of those people who are in sorrow are saying, oh God, take away my sorrow. So God will necessarily hear this and say, okay, you know, I'm ready to take away your sorrow, it's reached such an extreme, it's time for that which is contained within the being of God to be conveyed to the human beings who have reached an extreme degree of emptiness and sorrow.
Okay, we are talking about virtues and the structure and residence of virtues, and say for example one loves peace, however because of past trauma one finds oneself in the position of being a very angry person or a very depressed person. How do you, although you love the virtue and you try and bring it into your relationships and interactions, how do you let go of your darkness? How do you do that?
You know, God is the healer.
Okay.
So when a person says to God, okay, anything I do is not working, I give up, I surrender, I'm there, you show me what to do, you know, that is the time when God will fill the soul with the virtues, the love, the peace, the qualities. And then the person has to take care of that, you see, because you have to really change the way you operate and no longer be operating on the base of materialism, of selfishness and various other negativities, because as soon as you do that, it cuts off your access to the treasures from God. And so this is something one has to learn.
Okay, it can't possibly be a simple matter though, because even within oneself, let alone outside, one's own darkness is quite a strong presence. And is wanting to be virtuous, is that sufficient to become virtuous with God's help?
I think you need to go further than that. You need to say, you know, you need to say, I give up, my way of doing things has not worked out, I'm listening, teach me, tell me, I will follow, you see. That's the kind of approach that is going to bring that assistance, that presence, that help, you know. And I think that when a person appreciates what that source is and who that source is and how easy it is to be connected with that one when you simply just put aside the false ego, it's not so difficult. And the darkness in a person is immediately dispelled when you bring in the light of God. There's no darkness when light is there.
Okay, so is that the sign then?
The trick is to hold on to it, you see, because it's so easy to let go or to lose contact, and then you have to really practice to be stable and steady and really turn away from the attraction to negativity, and that has to be a personal choice.
Okay. Your last sentence is a topic for another show, because it's not just a question of understanding that, it's a question of how to put it into practice. To connect with God as He really is one thing, but to hold on to that in a world where every single thing, including your own body, becomes resistance, is a conversation for another time. Okay, but ladies and gentlemen, as you see, this, it's doable. I hope you felt that rather than just heard the words, because the beauty of speaking to a yogi is that the words that are articulated carry with it in this case, 40 years of spiritual power on a human level. And that is tangible to me. I hope it was as real for you as it was for me. And to me, that is a sign of being authentically spiritual, that when you say something, the listener can feel it to be true. And so I hope that you are able to invite God into your space. Like Sister Denise has shared, I hope you are able to feel God and hear the message that God is giving to you, and also bring into your own personality aspects of God's personality and improve your life. The deepest message that Sister Denise shared with me today and with you is He is waiting for your invitation. He is waiting for your invitation, which is actually very sweet in a world that has lost its sweetness. So Sister Denise, from the heart, thank you. And thank you for joining us and lending us your ear. And we will hopefully see you again soon. Take care and goodbye.